Hey everybody, this is Jason Gardner
and Kyla Story,
and you're listening to Strange Fruit, musings on politics, pop culture, and black gay life on WFPL.org.
The AIDS Walk happens in Louisville this Sunday. We know HIV and AIDS disproportionately affects the African-American community, but we wanted to find out how much and why.
But first, we find out more about the event itself from Brad Hampton, the director of the Louisville AIDS Walk.
How long have you been with the AIDS Walk, and how long has the AIDS Walk been going on in Louisville?
We were founded in 1993, and this will be our 20th walk, and next year will be our 20th anniversary. And I've been with the organization since, well, I volunteered in 95, and I began working in HIV/AIDS in 96, so about 16 years.
HIV/AIDS has been around for, you know, a good 32 years
30
now.
Yeah,
30 plus years now. And do you think that there is, in getting tested, in people preventing themselves from contracting the disease, do you think there is still some stigma and shame associated with HIV/AIDS? Or do you think that, you know, because the disease has been out 30 plus years, that somehow people have gotten better with getting tested and knowing their status?
I think that there's still a great deal of misconception and stigma, discrimination, misunderstanding, and shame associated with this disease that there is not for many other diseases. And because of that, people have a tendency to not want to get tested. And they don't want to get tested because I hear all the time people will say, I don't want to know. And in reality, you really do want to know, because this is a virus that in the course of the 30 years of the epidemic, people have more opportunity now to get access to medical care and effective therapies that can prolong their life. And the longer that you are living with the virus and you don't know you're living with the virus is ravaging your immune system and doing, in some cases, irreparable damage. So it's really important for people to know what their status is, but that's very complicated because people don't want to get tested because they're afraid of being shunned by their family and friends and employers and coworkers. And so it has gotten better than what it used to be in medication and community attitudes, but in some cases it never ceases to amaze me that we are in 2012 and 30 plus years into the epidemic, the mindset of people who will say to us, they'll call into the health department and say, can I get it if I'm using the same utensils from eating after someone, or if I'm, you know, and it just surprises me that, you know, in 2012, we still have those questions.
What are some of your most memorable, or I'd say favorite, moments in working with the walk?
So I met a individual, and he started telling me this story, and it really touched me and made my eyes water. He lost his brother to HIV/AIDS, and while on his deathbed, he said, I made a promise to him that I would always support the Louisville AIDS Walk in his memory. So he is not financially able to open his checkbook and write a large check. So what he does is every night he goes out in his neighborhood and he collects cans. And he takes all those cans once a year to the recycle place. And then he takes the money from that and brings it to the AIDS Walk. Hmm. And I was so touched that he supports us in this way, and he does this every day. That's just amazing. And we deal with a lot of apathy. You know, HIV is not the banner issue that it used to be years ago when it grabbed a bunch of headlines. It can be very frustrating with the apathy that people have grown very complacent, when in reality, our agencies are struggling because we have more people living with HIV/AIDS in Louisville today than we've ever had before.
So in discussing HIV and AIDS for this particular episode of Strange Fruit, I was reading a book recently and I came across a poem. And the poem is called Okay, and it's by an activist and poet named Tim M. West from Chicago. And as I read this poem, it really spoke to me as it relates to this issue, because it talks a lot about social stigma, and it speaks to kind of what a person who's newly diagnosed experiences, and explaining his status to potential lovers, and potential mates, and kind of like the reaction he gets from those folks. And so this poem really, I think, speaks to some of the ideas that we discuss in this show today. Here's that poem, I'm Okay, read by Louisville actor, choreographer, and dance instructor, Frank Goodlow.
He said, okay, I'm okay with you being, positive. Like I'm okay with him being negative. Please spare me the negation, cloaked in pity, self-congratulation, for I have always had to be my own savior. Today and tomorrow, and swallow these pills that are hard to swallow twice daily. Not to live for an other, but because I enjoy the love preparing itself today for tomorrow. The splendor and wonderment of blushing and butterflies and not, okay, so spare me. This ain't one of those deep poems, yo, but simply my living deserves better. Need to know the one I choose to love and who chooses me is not afraid to fall. Kiss, sex, yes, safely, yes, bravely. I love me enough to protect myself and my better whole, hold fast to the care, those who care enough to care to give. I be that caregiver, not the gift some joke about under whispers in dim-lit bars, nor the house in Virginia, or other stigmatizing thorns that kill the dying while they are still living. When we are all dying, if killing, even softly, among us who, too, is of God, so who you calling sick? I be better than the whispers that seek to indict me as sick, not healthy, for being honest, am not ashamed. I have saved lives for living honestly the life God gave me. So I'm better than the scapegoat some hide behind, the DL skeleton-filled closet protected by pink elephants. How very, tough. How very masculine. Okay? I did not break down one closet door to enter another. And neither will my lover. Whatever his or her status test results will be a positive result in bravery. We all non-reactive, we trust God, the universe, to keep and hold us. So I need to know, when family and friends ask why you'd risk your life to be with me, that you believe you'd risk your life, not fulfilling our desire to build a life with a good man, with a good heart, positively, want no shame in our bedroom or out of it. For shameful loving is a most crude disease, kills us faster than AIDS. A T-cell fails with each self-rebuke, and joy is restored with each. Thank God that loving has kept me going this long. So must continue to be the drive for this BMW. This black male warrior is Ovia, okays. Now I be a joy snatcher, warmed by the sunshine of my own smile. Needed when I cloud, now I unshackle my dreams so they appear in full color. Accept joy only in 3D and high def. Now I romance in stereo, so love looks so much brighter than okay. So no, I'm okay. And it's okay that you're okay with being with a positive guy, okay? But I'm not that guy to see and try just to try and see. See, I'm no longer okay with being anyone's okay. I'm a diamond nestled in earth to shine for the whole who finds and claims my heart. And about that, I'm absolutely positive. I'm okay.
That was I'm Okay by Tim M. West, read by Frank Goodlow. To find out why the number of HIV infections don't look the same across color lines, we talked to Dr. Laquandra Nesbitt. She's the director of the Louisville Department of Public Health and Wellness.
All right, Dr. Nesbitt, so we know that this Sunday is the Louisville AIDS Walk. Would you just tell us why it's important that folks come out to support the AIDS Walk and perhaps talk about how HIV affects, in particular, African Americans here in Louisville?
Absolutely. The HIV-AIDS Walk that will be happening here this Saturday is one of the premier events for us to increase awareness about HIV in our community, as well as to raise funds to support HIV prevention efforts in our community. In the state of Kentucky, unfortunately, we didn't begin HIV reporting until 2005, but we know that about 32% of HIV cases are occurring in African Americans, whereas African Americans only account for 7.7% of the Kentucky population. And so it's a major issue in the African American community because they are disproportionately burdened with HIV.
Dr. Nesbitt, can you infer some meaning behind the stark contrast in AIDS statistics when it comes to African Americans versus whites in Louisville?
So nationally, we know that one of the fastest growing groups in terms of the number of new HIV diagnoses are happening in black men. And of those, they tend to happen more frequently in men who have sex with men. So that's one group that we need to track. About 30% of HIV infections in blacks in this country occur in women. And the concern is that the women may be engaging in heterosexual relationships with men who have sex for men, which puts them at an increased risk. Part of the issue in the African-American community has been the stigma around same-sex relationships, as well as the stigma around getting tested for HIV and actually knowing your status. And so those are the things that we want to message around very early on. Unfortunately, we've got we estimate that about 1 in 5 adults and teens who in the U.S. don't know that they're HIV positive, and they are. And if you don't know that you're positive, you don't change your behavior to prevent further spread of the disease. And so we really think it's important that we have more people get tested, know their status. If they are positive, we do a lot of education around how they prevent the spread of the disease. This is absolutely something we can control and eradicate.
Wonderful. Dr. Nesbitt, whose job is it to, number one, provide prevention messages, or number two, provide encouragement to get tested? Does that responsibility lie with parents? Is it the school's responsibility, the local health department, the church? Where should we be getting messages about prevention and also about testing?
It's actually, in my opinion, a collective responsibility. At the health department, we have a myriad of resources at our disposal, and we've actually revamped some of our testing programs where we focus on the highest risk groups. We are no longer sort of testing communities that we think are not really going to be positive, but we're testing them just to test and count the numbers. We are really focusing on the high risk groups. One of the biggest things that we can do in our community is start testing of everyone. I mean, there's this concept of, well, only this group of people should be tested. And so when you go to your primary care doctor for your annual visit, you should be offered an HIV test. When you're in the emergency room, you could be offered an HIV test. So there's a number of entry points that people who are actually getting into healthcare have missed opportunities for HIV testing. One of the things we try to do is to partner with community organizations because we know not everybody has a doctor's visit every year. And so we try to catch people or meet people where they are. So we did testing, HIV testing, at the Dirt Bowl this year. And we look for opportunities like that where people are going to come together for some social purpose or otherwise, and then we try to take advantage of that opportunity to do some education and awareness about HIV and do some testing.
Wonderful. Dr. Nesbitt, we know you're a busy woman. Thank you so much for all the wonderful work you're doing here in the community. It's wonderful to have you here in Louisville. So thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity.
So we can't talk about HIV and AIDS without speaking to someone who's living life with HIV. We spoke by phone to my friend Gary about his life as an HIV positive man.
I've been living with it. I actually just celebrated my 7th year anniversary with it in July of this year. So it's been 7 years. And at the time that I was diagnosed, I was volunteering for an agency by the name of the Tobias Project. They were an HIV prevention agency that was geared towards young men of color. between the ages of 13 and 29. And I volunteered with them. And one night they opened up testing for everybody that was there at the facility. And I just remember on that particular day, I kept wondering, like, do I do it? Don't I? And all of the kids that were there, of course, you know, they were all scared, not really wanting to know. And, you know, so I was encouraging them to go and get tested. And, you know, people were coming out, you know, with these really great results. And I remember being the very last person being tested that evening. And so I went in, I sat down, and, you know, they did the oral swab or, you know, the oral quick test on me. I waited for 20 minutes. And the 20 minutes had passed, and I noticed that no one had came out of the room. And so I began to think, like, okay, no one's coming out, Gary. About 2 minutes later, one of the coordinators stuck his head out, and he kind of looked at me, and, you know, he stuck his head back in the room, and I'm like, okay, so now they're trying to debate who's going to be the one to break it to me. And then I, you know, I just really wondered, well, how did I feel about that situation? And a couple of minutes later, someone finally came out, and, you know, with tears in their eyes, they gave me the news that I was positive. And I just really remember being numb, not really processing what they said. Processing it, but not processing, and wondering, how was I going to tell my mother?
Had you ever been tested prior to that, or was this your first time being tested that day?
No, actually, I had tested before, probably like about 2 years before then. I had a scare where someone came and told me that someone who I had been intimate with had it. But I went and I got tested for myself and, you know, pretty much had went on with my life. You know, I was, sometimes I was protective and sometimes I wasn't. So, you know, I never really asked about using condoms or things like that. If people wanted to use them, great, but if we didn't talk about it or anything like that, then it was just something that I really did not think about. I pretty much figured, well, if they had something, surely they would tell me about it. And, you know, as we all know, sometimes people don't for whatever reason.
Yeah. On that note, I wonder, do you think that's a very common perspective that a lot of people, especially a lot of Black gay men like us, have that kind of, you know, if he doesn't insist on using a condom, that's because he's negative, or, you know, don't ask, don't tell, or it's better if we don't bring it up. What do you think that's about?
I definitely think because there's still a lot of shame about sex and about sex between men in particular. So I think we're dealing with that. And then the fact, it's just something that we're not taught. Like, we hear the messages, but I think people really just don't think that they actually have the right to ask somebody else.
There's always lots of advice about HIV prevention, and if you're negative, stay negative, and wear a condom, et cetera. But I'm interested in hearing from you some advice for someone perhaps who's newly diagnosed.
My advice would be to remove your own stigma, first and foremost. If you're going to get tested, knowledge is power. When you know, then you can figure out what needs to be done next to take care of yourself if you are positive. And I really do think that it starts with prevention first, but in order for that to happen, you have to think that your life is valuable. You can't really sit around and wait for someone to tell us, like, it's okay for you to love yourself. That really is something that we have to understand for ourselves. And if we understand it for ourselves, and if we do it for ourselves, then other people have to do it for us, or they get pushed to the wayside. I have wonderful people in my life, but that is because I demanded love and respect for myself. And so they have no choice but to love and respect me as well. And if they don't, then I cut them loose, because that's negative energy, that's something that's pulling me down, and it keeps me from moving forward. And I don't have time to not move forward. I don't have time to not move forward. I'm still living my life. I have breath in my body every single day, and so it's up to me to really make the best of it. And I will encourage that for anybody at all. Your life is not over. It's not over. You can continue to live and have a full, healthy, productive life, but you have to decide that you want that. That cannot come from somebody else. You have to decide that you can't wait for other people to tell you that it is okay to have that for yourself.
What I found was an overwhelming theme in all of the interviews. It seemed to be a common thread, was this idea, and it seems to exist across a multi-generational level, the idea that young people and, you know, well, not young people, but everybody, you know, having sex is just worried about pregnancy, and nobody seems to be concerned with STDs and STIs. And it just seems like in 2012, people should be much more aware of their sexual health. And realize that, you know, no one can give you anything, that our bodies are our own to maintain. And so therefore, it's important to know your status. It's important to maintain that sexual health, you know.
Some things that stood out to me during the process of this show, I really, really appreciated my friend Gary sharing his personal experiences of, you know, life after his diagnosis. I think that, especially for me and the community I'm a part of, I think that issues of HIV and AIDS oftentimes are accompanied by stigma. That oftentimes, we, as much as we don't talk about HIV and AIDS as black gay men, we do talk about it, but it's always like a read. It's always an insult. It's always, you know, just the worst things you could think of. It's always considered to be an insult. The ultimate insult for being a black gay person in this community is accuse someone of dying of HIV and AIDS. And so I think we have to move beyond that, and I think I have far too many friends and far too many loved ones and far too many of my kids who are living life with HIV and AIDS. And so I look at the people I love who are still productive citizens, who are still intelligent folk, who are still folks who are working to make the world a better place. And to me, that doesn't look like dying from HIV. Mm-hmm. To me, that looks like living with HIV. And so I think that it's really important that folks not only get tested, not only use preventative measures, but also that we encourage folks and wrap our arms around folks who are positive to let them know that life is not over, that somehow you're not any less part of our community, that you're not any less valued, that you're not any less worthy of respect and love. And so I want to dedicate this show to all of the people in my life who are important to me, who are either who we've lost to HIV and AIDS or who are currently living with and thriving with HIV and AIDS, and that they know they always have a friend and advocate in me. And hopefully we can work to change stigma for the entire community. So
the walk is this Sunday.
Tomorrow, yeah. We'll be there with our red shirts on.
So when you come down and see us at the walk, make sure you wear a red t-shirt so we can take the cute aerial photo.
And wear some cute and comfortable tennis shoes.
I mean, yes, make sure they're cute, okay?
And so we will see you all tomorrow at the AIDS walk.
See you tomorrow. Strange Fruit is produced by 89.3 WFPL in Louisville, Kentucky. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information on Strange Fruit, go to WFPL.org, find us on Facebook, or visit us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod. I'm Jason Gardner.
And I'm Kyla Story. Thanks for listening.